Nilqgħu l-istemmija ta' Campus FM għall-episodju ieħor ta' taħdietek Leo ma' Emmanuel Buttigieġ u Liam Gawċi. Ħanibda mistoqsija lik Liam, x'darbu l-libes illum inti?
Qed inħoss ħafna bar għax huwa żarbun pulit u m'għandix ċirkolazzjoni f'saqja.
Bħalti jgħid. U bdejna b'dil-mistoqsija għaliex dak jkun it-tema tagħna llum għaliex għandna mistieden li miegħu ħanitkellmu dwar dawn il- Żewġ pari żraber Ottomani li sabu ruħhom f'Nuremberg il-Ġermanja fis-seklu 16, fl-istess żmien meta l-kavalliri ġew Malta daw żraben sabu ruħhom Nuremberg. L-istudent tagħna huwa Dr. Stefan Hans li huwa Senior Lecturer fl-Istorja Bikrija Moderna fl-Università ta' Manchester. Għandu interess partikolari fl-istorja tal-kultura materjali, friki fl-oġġetti billi modi kelmuna. U fost oħrajn huwa rebieħ ta' Philip Leverhulme Prize, l-aktar xogħol riċenti tiegħu ħares lej l-impatt tar-rix mill-Amerika t'isfel fl-Ewropa fis-seklu 16, u bħalissa qed jaħdem fuq ktieb dwar ix-xahar fit-territorju tal-Habsburgs, so suġġetti interessanti ħafna. Fuq il-programmi tagħna kellna scholars stabiliti pal Mary Levin, Stefan huwa Rising Star u allura privileġġ anke li qiegħed magħna.
Privileġġ kbir.
Illum. So, Stefan, welcome to our program. We were just saying how wonderful you are, but of course you can't tell otherwise.
Well, thank you very much for the invitation. It's really a joy to be here. What a lovely program.
Thank you. It's our pleasure to have you. So, Stefan, I was just explaining to our audience that we're going to be talking about these two pairs of shoes, Ottoman shoes, that were in Nuremberg in the 16th century. Do you want to lead us a little bit into the world of these shoes and how you came to study them as well?
Yes, of course. I think probably best is to start first with a description of these artifacts. So we talk about a pair of 16th century shoes, men's shoes. They have a distinct oval shape, a distinct toe cap. They are made of dark brown, smooth leather with a light reddish touch, a light reddish shine. The leather is quite soft, which means that these shoes were actually worn. The outsole is also made of leather, so you can even see the cobbler's iron nails used to fix the sole to the shoe. So below the sole, you see these iron nails arranged in the shape of a pointed arch, which is echoing the overall shoe's shape. And we talk about shoes of quite some remarkable measures, if we want to put it that way, 26.5 centimeters in length, 10 centimeters in width, and which is still somehow normal, but the 12 centimeters in height are quite impressive. So we're talking about men's shoes with heels.
High heels.
So to say, so it's rather kind of heel reinforcement, which is made of hardwood. And these shoes survived in the Germanisches Nationalmuseum in Nuremberg in Germany, which is a truly outstanding museum. So everybody with an interest in early modern German history, but also early modern material culture studies, should really make the time to see this museum's outstanding collection. And this pair of Ottoman shoes is one of them. It is on display. And that's also how I came across these shoes for the very first time. And as I now said already, these are Ottoman shoes, so we know a bit more about their context of production, the context of use. They were made and sold in late 16th century Istanbul, the capital of the Ottoman Empire, one of the largest empires by that time, reaching, roughly speaking, from Baghdad to Budapest, from a border with Russia to what is nowadays Somalia. And they were bought not by an Ottoman subject, but by a German visitor of 16th century Istanbul. So I guess the question that we can discuss in today's broadcast is really, what can we learn from the study of such an everyday artifact? What does this pair of shoes tell us about 16th century life in general, but more specifically about cultural exchange between the Ottoman Empire and Central Europe? And that's why I think they're so fascinating.
Liam and I work on the Central Mediterranean, so an area of a lot of exchanges, willing and unwilling, with the Ottomans. So it's fascinating to get the Central European perspective, isn't it, Liam?
For us, I think it gives everything a context. and the material culture, such as something like this, is something that you can compare and contrast with, especially with let's say the context that we had in the Central Mediterranean with the Ottomans. We also have description of footwear that they were wearing when they are being captured, and we also have a description of shoes, let's say sewn and created on the island to be given to the Ottoman slaves. We have their patterns in our archives, and suddenly these things are, you know, when Stefan is talking about this, you know, they're lighting up. There are light bulbs in my head. Oh, I see. Oh, I can compare that. Nice.
Amazing. I mean, these shoes are really important also for the very personal circumstances of life that they document, that they materialize.
Yes.
So, Stefan, what's the bigger picture in which you're seeing these shoes? We talk about the material Renaissance. I mean, what does that mean in practice?
Exactly. So we talk about a time before the age of mass consumption, a time in which material literacy is a key characteristic for European societies. So we must consider 16th century Europeans as being highly trained in knowing, observing, experiencing, appreciating things and how they are made, appreciating the knowledge that went into the making of objects. And we think about a time in which materials are really key for the understanding and staging of the self, but also broader sentiments, ideas, and practices of that period. So what does it mean in practice for these shoes? It means that people would have been trained to, well, they would have also been trained to look at men's shoes, appreciating how they were made, how they were used. And that means that such a pair of shoes was important beyond pragmatic reasons. So people invested actually quite a lot of time, a lot of money, invested plenty of emotions into such footwear. We know from research conducted by Linka Rublak that the 16th century German merchant Hans Fugger, for instance, heavily relied on the services of numerous agents across Europe to help him procuring well-fitting leather shoes. And we also know that these shoes were often individually designed to fit both the individual shape of a foot, but also to fit the individual tastes of members of the urban elite of 16th century German cities. So there is a story about 16th century German urban life to be explored when we talk about these Ottoman shoes as well.
Because we're talking of things that were not yet really mass produced, were they? They had to be custom made. You had to have the skilled people to be able to produce something like this. I mean, in Europe there were guilds. I'm not sure if in the Ottoman Empire there were equivalents of such guilds that regulated these kinds of trades. But the effort that is required, no, to put a shoe together, it's not as easy as going online as it is today.
No, I'm sure it's not. And in fact, that is something that I wanted to ask. Do we know the type of leather that it is? What animal it is? Because that would make a difference, I think. Right? I'm no shoe expert.
I would love to know more about this. But for this, I think we also would need more comparative analysis to be conducted.
Okay.
Also, probably scientific analysis to be conducted, which can be intrusive. So there's also a question of what can be done.
Yes. Trust me, I'm a curator. I know that feeling.
Actually know quite a lot about the context in which these shoes were, this particular pair
okay.
of shoes was
Okay, can you
used.
Tell us a little bit more about this?
Mm-hmm. So we know that this pair of shoes was purchased by a Nuremberg Lutheran called Stefan Braun. He was born 1544, he lived until 1591, and he was the secretary of the embassy of the Holy Roman Empire in Istanbul from 1562 till 1576. And during this time in office, he actually acquired quite a collection of various Ottoman items. So when he returned to Nuremberg, he brought along a bow, several arrows, a leather quiver, but also this particular pair of Ottoman shoes that we're talking about here. And these items were kept within the family after his death. In fact, this still today these shoes are owned by the family, the Braun family, and are on loan in the museum.
Well, that's impressive in itself. No, 500 years later, that they
it is.
They had the good sense to hold on to them.
Yes,
but the family context is really crucial for the significance of these items, because these shoes were also a source of pride. So they were on display in the family's cabinet of curiosities.
I see.
They were on display. They were marveled at by the family, its visitors, its guests, by the patricians of the city. That means, these shoes were, part of a larger assemblage of artifacts, stored by this family. And in fact, they were on display together with a second pair of shoes, also chronicling customs and craftsmanship from across the globe. A pair of Spanish shoes. These were shoes that Stefan Braun had brought from a pilgrimage in Spain. Alpargatas, so shoes made of hemp cords. They are particularly resilient on long journeys. They are good for extreme weathers like the heat, especially in the Iberian summer. And they are also intricately made. And that is crucial for us when we think about the kind of appreciation of these shoes. Because at the same time, Europeans marveled New World indigenous artisans refined knottings of straw, of cords. Peter Martyr, for instance, when writing about the hammock, described such skills as indigenous ingenuity. So there was a wider appreciation of craftsmanship, foreign craftsmanship in particular, and the intricacy and knowledge that went into this.
It's fascinating to try to imagine this cabinet of curiosities with the shoes inside it as well. And as the way the family is proclaiming its status, its...
He must have been really proud of these shoes.
Yes, exactly. And I think also this context is important because it shows us a bit more, as you say, about how Stefan Braun might have perceived these Ottoman shoes, because on the one hand, he might have appreciated the ingenuity of foreign craftsmanship. We've spoken about that. But on the other hand, there is also a curiosity about the different fashions of the world, the different national styles, and the commemoration of biographical events and biographical moments, so moments of significance in the biography of Stefan Braun.
So with the shoes, he's leaving a footprint almost.
Exactly, yeah, that is absolutely right. So we...
Do we know if he was wearing them?
Yes, we know that he was wearing them. So... It's absolutely right to think of these as highly personal artifacts, because in the end, it's organic organic material. Leather transforms its appearance once it's worn. And these shoes, one might rightly say, carry the personal imprint, a footprint, so to say, of Stefan Braun. They were clearly loaded with, cultural meanings associated with the self, the body, emotions. And as we just mentioned quickly, he was wearing them, so he even commissioned a drawing.
This is so interesting.
For the family album, again, for the family album, depicting him wearing these Ottoman clothes and shoes in particular.
So you have to picture him in these beautiful reddish kind of shoes walking on a grey, dull day in Nuremberg, no? It makes quite an impact, probably.
Ironically, I was imagining him in sunny Istanbul buying them.
As well.
Yeah. I mean, the context of purchasing them are really worth to be discussed a bit more in depth. So,
in fact, that's where I would like to take you, because you mentioned a bit earlier, that he was the representative of the empire in Istanbul. So there was a form of embassy. Now, we're very familiar with the Venetians and the Genoese having their presence in the city. I have to admit that until quite recently, I wasn't actually aware of an imperial I don't know if you call it embassy, but an imperial complex, that's a Holy Roman imperial complex in Istanbul, because you'd think that the sworn enemies would not have that kind of thing, but in fact it's there. We'd like to hear more about that.
Yes, the imperial embassy is really key for contextualizing this pair of shoes. We must think of this imperial embassy as a hub of encounters, a hub of encounters between peoples, languages, objects. It was a large building complex that was guarded by Ottoman military personnel. In its shape, it actually echoed the architecture of Ottoman caravanserais. So it was assembled around an inner courtyard that accommodated a number of chambers, kitchens, stables with space for, as we know, more than 400 horses. So it's quite a large
building.
That's
impressive.
There is a balustrade on the second floor with which gave access to a large dining and residence hall, which was used by the ambassadors and ambassadorial entourage, like Stefan Braun as the imperial secretary. And then you must think of this complex housing several guest rooms with windows that could be open towards the street of Istanbul, but also another set of windows that could be open towards the building's inner courtyard. And in addition to all of this, there would have been little stores run by craftsmen. We know that such stores were run by dressmakers, blacksmiths, but also shoemakers. This was a space of contacts between Christian, Jews, Muslims, noblemen, craftsmen, a hub for the exchange of objects. And we can very well think of Braun might have purchased these shoes in one of these shoemaker stores in the lower part of the embassy.
They would have been local craftsmen. Right?
Exactly. They would have been local craftsmen, but exactly that's why it's important to think about the exact context of purchase, because if he purchased these shoes in one of these stores of the Imperial Embassy, then these Ottoman craftsmen, we must think of these Ottoman craftsmen also as responding towards the material desires of
a European.
Exactly, who would have been lodged nearby their stores. Another possibility is obviously that he might have purchased these shoes on nearby bazaars. You just mentioned the embassies of Venice and Genoa and Istanbul. It's actually quite an important comparison because these other European embassies were located in Galata, so in the quarter of at the northern shore of the Golden Horn, whilst the Imperial Embassy was located on the opposite shore. That means it was really at the heart of the Ottoman Empire's cultural, religious, and political center nearby the Topkapı Sarayı, near the antiquities such as the Column of Constantine, and nearby the city's main bazaars and mosques.
An impressive location.
Yes, and this is also this particular
full of meaning. Full of meaning to be there.
Absolutely.
The political importance of having that embassy over there, where in the heart of the Ottoman Empire. Let's face it. Till then, the largest and most powerful empire on the face of the earth.
I also find it fascinating, Stefan, that our friend Braun was a Lutheran. Yet he's representing the Holy Roman Emperor, who is a Catholic. Clearly, he must have been good at what he did. but it helps to break down these very simplistic stereotypes that perhaps we tend to operate with, very strict religious divides and so on. And especially then,
especially at this time.
Yes, and in a place like Constantinople, where it's Caput Mundi. You know, everyone is meeting there, as our friend did, Stefan.
Well, that is actually a very important comment, because that was a very big step for the emperor, which took place in the late 1560s, early 1570s, when he appointed for the very first time a Lutheran ambassador to Istanbul, David Ungnat, and this was followed by a number of Lutheran ambassadors in office in Istanbul. Stefan Braun was the imperial secretary, so he was working for these ambassadors. But alongside these two protagonists, there was all these two ranks that were occupied by Lutherans. There were many Lutherans in Istanbul as part of the wider ambassadorial entourage. If you think about Lutheran chaplains, for instance, at the embassy, Stefan Gerlach was one of the most important ones, later on also Salman Schweiger.
Besides our friend Braun, I hope I'm saying that correctly,
absolutely right.
Who else have you come across, therefore, in studying these shoes? You know, what other protagonists are there?
So you find lots of protagonists in this environment of the embassy, and all of them are very excited about entering a city of taste, entering a city of culture, entering a society that is highly literate and sensitive about interior culture. One of the most impressive ones, I would say, is Reinhold Lubenau, an apothecary and a physician who grew up in Königsberg, nowadays Kaliningrad, and who traveled Europe and who joined the embassy in Istanbul in 1573, so exactly the time of Braun's period in office, exactly. And he writes, he composed a diary, and he wrote quite massively about himself strolling through the local bazaars, purchasing medicine, herbs, other natural objects. In fact, he's quite proud of running some kind of personal reselling business, so he resold many of these artifacts that he purchased in the bazaar towards the visitors of the embassy. He also sketched and visited and sketched the antiquities of the cities. He walked around purchasing old manuscripts, and he copied some of these notes also for and sketches for pilgrims visiting the city.
Wow. I just love being there.
I'm just being fascinated. Stefan is talking. I'm transported into because I'm trying to see also the context. This is the period where you have the siege of Malta. You have Lepanto. You have all these very important moments in the 16th century. You know, you have Algiers coming into the fold of the Ottoman Empire. You have Tunis. You have Tripoli becoming let's say, part of the Ottoman Empire, and you know. I wonder what Braus listened, heard, seen, slaves walking in. I'm just fascinated. These shoes were there. These shoes were there.
Stefan, we only have a few minutes left, in fact. quick question. Any indication if they learned Ottoman Turkish? How did they communicate with locals?
Yes, so for some of these protagonists, we know that they tried to learn Ottoman. So Lubenau, for instance, he himself, he made some kind of alphabetic word lists about Arabic and organized alphabetically in terms of Arabic and Latin alphabets in order to get well acquainted with words that allow him to purchase these things. There were interpreters, of course, but by strolling around, exploring these stores, they also get acquainted with the materials and could point towards them. So we know that they purchased not only shoes, but also clothing, textiles, manuscripts, plants. Horse chestnuts were sent to Europe by the ambassador David Ungnat.
Wow.
They were sent to Carolus Clusius, so the court botanist of Emperor Maximilian II, who then planted these trees in Vienna. They circulated across.
Can I ask a question off script? Do we have any reference to coffee?
Not for this particular protagonist, not for Stefan Braun, but obviously coffee is important. So this is what we usually think about the Age of Turquoise, as it has been called by several historians, in particular Alexander Bevilacqua and Helen Pfeiffer. So early modern Europeans desired to use Ottoman things, to adapt them, to use, appropriate them. And coffee is one part of the story. Music is another one. Clothing, manuscripts, the Ottoman sofa or divan.
Okay.
Or this particular pair of shoes. These were what contemporaries would consider superb things, that allowed these people to caused excitement.
Yeah.
They caused curiosity. They widened these people's repertoire of cultural expression.
I have the same exact example of a corsair captain capturing Turkish women's clothes of a noble woman and sending them directly to his wife before he actually arrived in Malta. He sent them with a Greek ship as a gift to her, because she was renowned to walk around the streets of Valletta wearing oriental clothes. Obviously, we're talking 18th century, but this is so fascinating. It's the same today with souvenirs or you want to buy a good quality, you know, Egyptian cotton or this sort of thing.
But for Ottoman clothing, the important thing is also to consider the fashion trends in Europe at that time. So, for instance, an Ottoman kaftan would speak towards an increasing fashionability of wide sleeves in 16th century Europe.
Yep.
And also these Ottoman shoes for Stefan Braun were speaking to a new fashion. So at that time, European contemporaries experienced a certain fashionability of high heels that were associated with ideas of wealth, of power, of distinction. They also forged European bodies. They transformed them, if you want to put it that way, imposing upright postures, novel forms of movements that were associated with power, taste, knowledge, cultural refinement. They lend a certain gravity towards movement, culturally speaking. And they positioned also Stefan Braun at the forefront of these trends. And also another trend that must be considered at that time is that in 16th century Europe, there was an increasing demand for leather products because they're so rich in sensory and visual impact.
Well, Stefan, time has literally vanished.
Yes.
This was absolutely fascinating. Thank you so much for sharing these thoughts with us. And I think we will have you back at some point because we will want to hear more.
We must have you back.
It
would be a joy.
Exciting.
Thank you very much.
So once again, thank you so much for being with us. And
Again, thank you, Stefan, Dr. Stefan Haas. I'm Liam Gauci, along with Manuel Buttigieg. Thank you for being with us today. We'll see you next week.